You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Friday, July 11th. As part of broader Oregon Department of Transportation layoffs, three ODOT jobs have been terminated in Clatsop County. A total of 483 ODOT employees across the state have received layoff notices after state legislators failed to pass a funding package for the Transportation Department in this year's legislative session. The three layoffs in Clatsop County included a transportation maintenance specialist, an engineering specialist, and a transportation operations and maintenance manager. Earlier this week, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek said the statewide layoffs will mean not enough workers to provide the level of response Oregonians rely on for safety and road maintenance. State Representative Cyrus Javity also said the layoffs are a loss for both the workers and the communities they serve. Javity added that his focus will be on advancing a legislative solution that stabilizes road funding and protects frontline workers. If lawmakers fail to secure funding for the department, a second round of ODOT layoffs could affect an additional 200 state employees early next year. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. The 2025 Oregon legislative session, which concluded 2 weeks ago, was characterized as much by the legislation that did not get passed as that which did. But State Representative Cyrus Javity says he believes the session was an overall success. One of those successes he points to involves the current expansion project at Columbia Memorial Hospital in Astoria. The hospital was able to secure $6 million from the legislature to go towards safety retrofitting. Another local success Javity points to is the $700,000 of state funding brought in for the Columbia River Maritime Museum's Mariner's Hall Exhibition and Education Building. That project is currently under construction in downtown Astoria. Javity and other lawmakers were hoping to revise Oregon's transient lodging tax from its current stipulation that 70% of tax revenue is reserved for tourism and 30% for local infrastructure. Javity's proposed bill to improve the allocation and distribution of the tax's revenue to help communities that are heavily impacted by tourism did not pass, but he says he hopes to revisit the bill in the 2026 short session. At the very end of the session on June 27th, Democratic state lawmakers proposed a 3-cent increase to Oregon's per-gallon gas tax in order to stave off ODOT layoffs after a larger transportation package fell through. But that tax increase did not pass after almost every Republican and some Democrats expressed opposition. In healthcare, Javity also points to many key pieces of legislation that passed with bipartisan support that will support residents in rural communities. One of those bills expedites the licensure of certain healthcare facilities, which has allowed for a provider to quickly begin operating a new dialysis clinic in Tillamook. Javity says the idea for that bill came from the closure of the old Tillamook dialysis clinic that resulted in roughly 20 patients having to travel farther for life-saving treatment, more than an hour each way, three times a week. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian. Read more online at dailyastorian.com. Food insecurity is rising in Oregon. As Bryce Dole reports, the recently passed Republican policy bill could make the problem worse.
About 1 in 6 Oregonians rely on food stamps to put food on their tables each month. The new bill makes it harder for people to qualify through the program SNAP, including with new work requirements. Republicans say the program was poorly managed and that the bill is a step toward reining in unnecessary spending. But food assistance advocates say program cuts will increase hunger in Oregon. Scott Cooper is the executive director of Neighbor Impact in Central Oregon.
The idea that we are going to send hundreds of thousands of people into hunger is a very, very worrying, sad moment for me.
As the federal government pulls back, the bill requires states to pick up the costs of administering the program. I'm Bryce Dole reporting.
4 years ago, Ann Davison's victory in the race for Seattle City Attorney was seen as an upset, fueled by voter distress over drug use and petty crime. Now, Davison is facing three challengers in her quest for a second term. And in their bids to defeat her, they're banking on Seattle voters' opposition to the Trump administration. KUOW's Amy Radel explains.
In 2020, Davison went public with her disillusionment with the local Democratic Party, which she accused of failing to address social disorder on the streets of Seattle. After a failed bid for lieutenant governor as a Republican, she won her next race to become Seattle City Attorney. She's seeking re-election this year, and Davison says party labels just aren't relevant for this office.
This is a nonpartisan race, and I'm a problem solver.
Davison says one of her biggest accomplishments was reducing the impact of so-called high utilizers, over 100 people who generated thousands of misdemeanor criminal referrals. Those people weren't getting booked into jail when she took office, and she worked to change that. Davison says staying focused on local conditions is the best way to increase public safety.
I think that's what I've done because it certainly is not how it was in 2021. And I think most people feel it has gotten better.
But in a city that has seen vigorous protests against Republican President Donald Trump, Davison's three Democratic opponents say her party affiliation is relevant to voters.
And some of the priorities and things that the current Republican city attorney has done is completely out of line with ours, our values here.
That's Erica Evans at a voter forum in Seattle's Seward Park neighborhood in June. Evans has worked as a prosecutor in the city attorney's office and more recently at the federal level. She contrasts Davison's switching parties in 2020 with her own job the next year. Evans helped prosecute participants in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol after Trump failed to win re-election.
I did the initial appearance in the Tacoma federal courthouse on two insurrectionists in our district. Having someone join at a time like that during an administration like that, it's really disgraceful.
Evans says she also disagrees with Davison's decision to pull out of an alternative to prosecution known as community court, which Davison said was ineffective. Another candidate, legal aid attorney Rory O'Sullivan, has defended clients from eviction and foreclosure. He objects to Davison's efforts to ban people from areas of prostitution and drug use. If elected, O'Sullivan says he'd work to more aggressively challenge the Trump administration on immigration enforcement and the withholding of federal dollars.
This is a place where the city attorney's office can and should be stepping in to file a lawsuit to demand that that money get released. This is something that our state attorney general, Nick Brown, has been doing from day one.
Davison may have identified as a Republican, but she joined other blue cities in lawsuits over frozen federal grants related to World Cup preparations next summer and over Trump's attempt to penalize cities that don't cooperate on federal immigration enforcement. But her third challenger, public defender Nathan Rouse, says Davison's efforts to defend sanctuary cities fall short.
The city joined several weeks after the fact when a different city led the way. We need to be leading on these issues because the city is looked to as an example for how to fight back against Trump.
Davison condemns the federal government's withholding of congressional funding as incomprehensible and bizarre. But she doesn't call Trump out by name, and she says it's not the role of her office to brainstorm additional lawsuits.
We really are not the creative space for that. We are here to defend what the policymakers have designed from a programmatic standpoint, the laws here of the city. That's my job, and I will defend those fully with the full weight of my office.
Any impact of Davison's reluctance to wade into national politics is unclear. City records indicate both she and Erica Evans have raised the maximum amount of money allowed under Seattle's Democracy Voucher Program. The top two candidates in the August 5th primary will move on to the general election in November. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
You're listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at kmun.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org.